Hi, I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Marys.
And this is Playboy Revisited. As usual, we'll start off the episode with a drink recipe. This is a recipe from Gavilan Tequila. I honestly don't even know if the brand still exists, but it's called a tequini, which is basically just a tequila martini. It's 2.5 ounces of tequila, white tequila, a half ounce of dry vermouth, a dash of bitters, and then to garnish it, like an olive or a lemon twist. So that's what I'm drinking today. Feel free to drink it too if you're over 21. And today we're going to be talking about the most obvious Playboy topic, sexuality. We'll kind of be discussing in general Hugh Hefner's representation of sexuality. We'll talk about how sexuality is represented in like all of the articles in this issue, and we'll talk about sexuality at the time. So this is the March 1965 issue of Playboy. The first thing that they seem to talk about in a number of articles, a number of reader mail, is the relationship between guilt and sexuality, which I think, especially if you're Catholic, you have a good understanding of. But
I thought you were going to say, especially if you're a guy, because like postnatal clarity is a huge thing, and like I don't know if girls have it, but like I hate, like, dude, I get so depressed when I bust a nut.
Is it guilt or just shame?
I don't know. It's not. I think it's just guilt. It makes me so depressed.
So you have like a really healthy relationship with sex.
Yeah, me and every other woman in the world have a very healthy relationship with sex. That's why the women love me.
Well, so when you said like, especially for dudes, I mean, I really think that guilt, I only know my experience, but I think that guilt and female sexuality is pretty tied pretty closely, but it does go both ways. And what Hugh Hefner has to say about it is that, he says man, but I'm going to say we've been taught in Western society to feel guilty if we're like at all comfortable, at all happy, or if anyone accidentally happens to derive pleasure for something that borders on enjoyment, that all of these things kind of cause this feeling of guilt. So, I mean, we've been conditioned to feel guilty for feeling good. I think especially when it comes to sex.
No, I wish sex made me feel great. It does the opposite. It makes me feel so depressed. The reason I say like it to me is more of a guy thing is I only ever hear guys talk about postnatal clarity, and it's like a meme on the internet. But it's actually a thing though. Like it's so nuts, pun intended. And I don't know, it's crazy.
I think postnatal clarity is like also maybe just like as a woman, guilt is so wrapped up in all of it that it's not just post nut. It's like
it's just sex clarity.
I think for me, like the way that guilt factors into sex is, it's not that I love the idea of women being able to enjoy sex. I love the idea of you being able to take control of what sex means to you and experience that in a way that is beneficial for you. I'm behind that 100%. I try as hard as I can to kind of like get rid of any of the thoughts of guilt or repression that come along with sex. You know, every time I think of, you know, what going through a hoe phase is like, I still very much have some sort of shame associated with what that means. You know, like, am I lesser because I'm enjoying my sexuality?
Yeah. I wanted to bring that up. Like, it's so much harder for girls to like enjoy sex because of the stigma they get around it. You know, if they like have partners or like multiple partners, a lot of guys are quick to like call them a hoe. That's where guys will like get praised for it. And it's just stupid to me.
Yeah, I mean, also the way that stigma affects women, like I think we really have gotten a lot better within my lifetime in terms of female sexuality. Like I think, I don't know if it's because my parents are like from a small town in the South, that probably contributes. But when my mom talks about, you know, her friends' experiences in high school and stuff, like it was, you know, you really did have to worry about your reputation. Like now I feel like you can be sexually liberated and you can be a woman who sleeps around with men and talk about it. And it's not like you're not a social pariah. We have gotten a little bit better, but there is still so much of that stigma that's built in and specifically gendered.
And I think it's been, a lot of it has been due to like pop culture, stuff like Playboy. And like nowadays, stuff like, like Megan Thee Stallion or something. I know a lot of guys hate her because she, raps about her wet ass private parts.
That song's honestly such a banger.
I still don't get it. Like, why are you hating on that stuff?
Why are
And
you
I
hating
think,
from outside the club? You can't even get
yeah, like
in.
you can't even get in her pants. Why are you hating, dude?
I mean,
How she doing?
you should be able to own your sexuality
Yeah,
however that looks
100%.
like, you know,
Yeah.
whether that's you sleeping around or whether that's you keeping your virginity until marriage. Like, you should be able to do that the way that you want to do
Yeah,
that.
100%. Yeah, and I think that it sucks that people would judge you by the way that you wouldn't treat your own body because it's your body. Who cares? It's
What do you think, besides, you know, the post-nut clarity and then feeling bad about whoever you're in bed with, what do you think the real effects of like guilt or repression or I don't know if your history with sexuality is that which has taught you to be ashamed of having sex. Like, I don't know what that growing up was like, but how do you feel like your guilt or repression currently affects you?
Well, since I'm a male, I've never really had like guilt of like having sex to me. Like for males, I feel like it's always like, oh, this guy just had sex, he's the greatest guy in the world. So my guilt isn't like the same as a woman who has sex and there's a lot of people judging her for having sex. I feel like guilt for me has been, I feel guilty, but like they're all for the wrong personal reasons. It's not like a common phenomenon. Sometimes I feel guilty for having sex because I'm like, damn, I don't really like this girl that much. I think my problems with sex, personally, a lot more. I'm a lot more fortunate with my problems than most women are, because most women are they have actual problems with sex. Mine are just post-nut clarity, where I cry for a little bit.
The way that like Hugh Hefner talks about how he expects that guilt and repression affect us societally, he says like it could lead to unhappy marriages, frequent divorces, impotence, masochism, virginity, frustration, perversion. Basically, like this kind of Freudian concept of like this guilt or repression of sexuality influences every aspect of your life
Okay, I was gonna
negatively.
say something about like the masochist type of thing, but I was gonna say like it'll probably lead to like some type of kinks. Some kinks do develop because of some unhealthy copingism or stuff like that.
If your feelings of sexuality are built into what your feelings of guilt are, like if those understandings kind of go hand in hand, then yeah, it would make sense that whatever kinks you develop or whatever understanding of sex you develop, it might have that built into it.
Yeah, and I think this the marriage thing too. Yeah, I feel like with marriage, you gotta have like a healthy sex life, Otherwise, you're gonna be unsatisfied, and it's gonna be, this is the partner that you're trying to be with the rest of your life. So, if they're not satisfying you, then eh.
It is astounding to me, people who are in long-term relationships who don't have sex before marriage, because like, what if it's your honeymoon and it sucks and
Yes,
that's the
I.
person you're stuck with for the
To
rest of
me,
your
what's
life?
crazy. To me, what's crazy is that like. There's some people that like a lot of them are like very religious people, and they try to like save their virginity up until they're married, and live your life the way you want to do. But that's just so crazy, and I don't know what the sex is gonna be like. And then the girl might be like, "Sex isn't what I wanted it to be," because she never had enough like freedom to like know what she's really into sexually. It's so normal and healthy to like practice sex and find out who you are and what you're into. A lot of times. You're probably not into what you think you were into at first. And you can only get that way by experimenting.
I think that waiting till marriage can be especially damaging for women. Like you were saying before, if we were talking about like the percentage of women who orgasm during sex versus the percentage of guys who get to finish, there's a big gap in that. And especially if you are with somebody who like doesn't have experience, doesn't have knowledge, it's so much easier to fall into that like, oh, you know, like he's gonna have a good time and I'm just kind of here. If you don't have that experience, if you haven't claimed your own sexuality, it's much harder to have a good relationship and where you as a woman are continuously having satisfying sexual encounters. You don't know how to do that for yourself and you don't know how to demand that from someone else.
And that's also a very bad side effect from the guilt towards it is that maybe like a lot of women do want to like express themselves and find out what they're into, but they'll feel so guilty, so they're like, man, I have to wait or whatever, and then it's gonna lead to a very unhappy marriage and unhappy sex life, and that's probably bad because I think the world sucks, but for most people, I feel like sex is probably like one of the better things in life. Not for everybody, but it would suck that you can't enjoy something that that should be enjoyed.
I mean, you're spot on. It would be hard to only have bad sex for your entire life. It should be a rush of oxytocin and dopamine and serotonin in the best kind of satisfying way.
Yeah, speaking of having bad sex, I just want to apologize to all the women I've been with.
I hope they're listening to this pod. A point that this magazine makes that I agree with is part of the only thing that can combat this Western Christianity-minded version of bad sex and guilt and repression and all of that understanding that's tied in with sex is good sex education. And I think, we don't have that because of that Christianity and guilt and repression and how much that affects us, like as the United States. But I feel like when you have not only sex ed, but good sex ed that talks about, I don't know, how you can get pleasure from sex, how you can have a healthy relationship with sex, how you can have a healthy relationship with the people that you're having sex with. If that's included in sex education, that's built to combat all of these negative feelings that are tied up in it. But we don't do that. We don't have enough
Yeah,
of that.
100%. I think sex education is such an important like thing to learn, and like a lot of schools, they will have sex ed classes, but I feel like a lot of them are almost like scary. Like they just give you all the negatives of having sex, like all the STDs you could catch, and the risk of getting pregnant at a young age or this and that.
It's literally just that one scene from Mean Girls. If you
Yeah,
have sex,
exactly.
you'll get pregnant and die.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's like all of sex class, and I think while a lot of it is important, you will get there's a good chance of you getting STDs and getting pregnant, but you could also be like, hey, but you could also have fun with it, be safe, get tested regularly, use protections. I think a lot of these sex ed classes are very important enough, and these are things that you're gonna need to know for the rest of your life. These aren't things, this isn't like
It's literally practical
Yeah,
education.
it's not an equation that you may use or you may not, depending on where you go in life. But these are things that you're gonna have to use. So
Yeah,
I
more
think,
important to learn about sexuality than the Pythagorean theorem.
yeah, 100%. Well, I don't know. I feel like I've solved those equations a lot more than I have sex. But maybe that's why I haven't had sex.
For me, like my sex ed, when I had it in elementary school, middle school, and high school. So I'm from California. We have a more robust sex ed program than people in Texas. But even like you were saying, it's very much like here are some slideshows of the STDs that you can get and die from. And then learn how to put a condom on a banana. And then the parts where they talk about like menstruation, they will literally separate the boys and the girls, which is stupid because it's biological and we should just all learn about it. Like, I'm sorry if you think blood is gross.
Yeah, I think that sucks because it's, going a woman going through a period is like the most normal thing. It's so normal. It's just biology, and I feel like separating the guys from it is hindering.
It stigmatizes a natural
Yeah,
phenomenon.
exactly, and then that's why a lot of guys are grow up being like, "Oh, periods are gross." It's just normal, dude. There's nothing wrong with it. Then you'll learn a little bit about it. You will be prepared. Like, what if you have a daughter grow when you grow up?
Well, she can just talk to her mom about that kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
that's right. Only women know about that stuff.
Yeah, so that was like my high school sex ed. It wasn't the best. I mean, at least we had it, which is more than a lot of places can say. But in college, like I majored in psychology. I took a human sexuality class. Like one of my homework assignments was that I had to go to a strip club because I'd never been before. But that class was so much more eye-opening because it was about healthy relationships and your relationship with sexuality and how that's healthy for you, which is how, I mean, again, that should be built into curriculum when you're talking about what a blue waffle is. You should also be talking about whether or not you're in an abusive relationship and how to identify that.
Yeah, the abusive relationship part is so important because a lot of women, a lot of people just don't know they're in an abusive relationship. They think it's extremely normal, and it's scary to think that they think that's what a normal relationship is when they're being abused. And that could also lead into your sexual life, to doing things that maybe you don't want to do, but you think you have to because you are in an abusive relationship.
Education and awareness is important. And it's cool. Like, it's really cool that Hugh Hefner is advocating for that and continues to advocate for that. Like, I really do think Playboy has lent a lot of.
Wait, you said continue? Is he still alive?
No, he passed, but you know, this is 1965. He continues to do it until
he's doing it through the grave, my man.
Oh, his publications live on, and so does his legacy, because every Halloween, you've got at least 3 million people dressing up like him. One thing that I find really interesting too, like that he comments about sexuality, is he specifically says that he doesn't advocate sex as a sport. So, I mean, he is writing this in 1965. Maybe he changes his opinions by like 72, but
who the hell uses sex as a sport? What's the point system here?
Well, just the idea of like sex as something that like you can conquer, like something you do on weekends, like sex is a hobby, sex is a sport. But he advocates that, you know, you have to be intentional, you have to be conscious and considerate, and you have responsibility within the realm of having sex. It's not just like, wow, yeah, it's not a point system. It's not how many people can I like hook up with and like get more points from that. It's
frat boys be on there talking about their kill. So
what, when we're talking about sexuality and guilt and that understanding, like one point that I want to talk about, virginity. And I think, you know, like we talked about this in terms of reputation, I think there was a lot more of an emphasis on, you know, retaining your virginity until marriage. Within my understanding, it doesn't feel like that's a mandatory thing. But I think in 1965, it was a much bigger deal. And also the understanding of virginity, losing your virginity as that being shameful for women, I feel like that was a lot more prominent. Of course, Playboy does a better job than other publications and other people at the time. By kind of defeating this idea. You know, they talk about the fact that just like the bursting of your hymen does not mean you have lost your virginity. I think that's a pretty archaic way of thinking of it. Like, oh, she doesn't have a hymen. We can check and see whether or not she has her virginity. But we know at this point that that's not valid. Like, you can't tell whether or not somebody's a virgin just because they have an intact hymen, or the hymen also grows back if you're not sexually active over a period of time. So that is definitely an archaic way of thinking. And Playboy's pretty quick to bust that myth. One thing they say when they're talking about female virginity is they say females, like males, rarely lose their virginity. They give it away, which I think is kind of empowering the way that they're saying that. Basically, like they're making an active choice of losing their virginity. It's not just guys who can like go out and go conquer. It's that women have a choice actively in their sexuality as well.
I do think it's really empowering that, you know, he's saying it like that, that women are also allowed to go out and also conquer. I feel like that should still be the thing now. And I feel like we should still keep advocating that, because maybe more girls would have sex with me.
So obviously it's Playboy. Obviously there's a lot of conversation about sex happening in the issue. And so I just kind of want to like do a rundown of the articles that talk about sex and kind of like the way that they frame it. So we already talked about some of these in our last episode. Shel Silverstein, his call out to sex is that, you know, he gets it on with Mexican prostitutes and comes home with STDs. So like, obviously he took that sex education to heart. A Clowny Night in the Red-Eyed World, like we talked about last time, it's this guy hooking up with this woman because he feels bad for her, even though she's horribly racist.
I think I missed that part of sex ed. I don't think I was there that day.
There's an article called The Bounty of Belize. It's an article about these three men that like sleep with this woman, and they all sleep together because they like bought her or something. And then she ends up like leaving with another guy.
Yeah, that just sounds like a good night.
Yeah, for the guy who's eloping with her. I mean, yeah. I think it's a little bit like what's that Justin Timberlake Lonely Island sketch where they like are with Lady Gaga, but just like end up together. It's not gay if it's in a three-way is the name of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I sucked up my homie in a three-way. It was pretty cool.
But yeah, that's kind of like what this story is like they're just like all left in bed together because they think that she's like sleeping with them, but she's actually just like sleeping with this other guy, and they're just like all kind of there.
I want that so bad.
Go out and make it happen this weekend. Get vaccinated. Get that threesome on. Another article that like talks about sex in a detached kind of way is called Oh Danny Boy, and it's basically the story of like this like 9-year-old who really wants to see a vagina. Like that's his like number one goal.
That's so young.
Well, the story too, like the fact that it's kind of written as this like sexy story in a Playboy magazine, but like the main character is 9 years old.
Yeah, real erotic.
But the way that he makes it happen is he has this like older guy friend who like owns a sporting goods store, and he sneaks into the store at night, and like the old friend is like sleeping with a woman, and he's like, hey, I won't tell on you guys, but like she's got to show me her snatch. And she's not into it, but like the older guy friend like forces her to show him her snatch, and his 9-year-old dreams have come true. It's the most exciting thing, but like a really weird story that I was better off like not having read.
Is that weird? That's how I saw my first
book. Your older guy friend.
Yeah, me at 9 years old, I had older guy friends. Please don't ask me to elaborate on that. I will not, for therapy reasons. And he also showed me a woman's vagina. I also blackmailed him. I think it's perfectly normal.
Did you time travel?
What's the next article say?
The next one that we kind of talked about last time too is the Fanny Hill article. But Fanny Hill, again, it was a movie that they're talking about here, but it was based on a book that was written in, I think, the 1700s. And that book was like the most infamous but famous piece of smut of all time. Like, people as famous as Benjamin Franklin professed to reading it and like talked about it. It's basically like the 50 Shades of Grey for like 400 years.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I didn't know that.
It was a really big deal and got banned like 100 times in 100 different places. But it's really interesting like to think about how people could be public about that in the past. I mean, when we think of shame as being tied to sexuality so closely, Benjamin Franklin's just shouting out Fanny Hill.
Yo, the new Fanny Hill chapter, go off.
I think that's actually a direct quote from him. So yeah, the articles, they all kind of like touch on sexuality in kind of like a passing manner. Or of course, there's all these like little jokes that are written in. But again, we've kind of covered the things that really talk about sexuality from a profound or intellectual standpoint, you know, when we're talking about guilt, talking about virginity. And then the last article in this issue, it's my favorite article of all. It's titled What is Normal? And it's written by a guy who worked for the Kinsey Sex Institute. So if you know anything about sexuality in like a scientific way, you know the name Kinsey, or maybe you've heard of like the Kinsey scale. Basically, it was like the first wide-reaching actual scientific study of sex. So Kinsey interviewed a bunch of people. It's not a great sample because he really interviewed primarily like male prostitutes that slept with other men. So it's maybe not like entirely universal experience, but he was interviewing people and publishing research to show that like sexuality is normal. Like the way that we talk about it is maybe not the way that it happens.
He interviewed my grandfather.
It was definitely revolutionary at the time. And this guy's writing is also pretty revolutionary, his summation of some of the research that they found. The whole article is about, you know, what is normal when we're talking about sexuality. So part of, again, what Kinsey did, what sex research is good for, is giving us like a realistic understanding of sexuality in a society where we're so repressed that we can't have good conversations about sex. And those conversations are somewhat inhibited by the fact that we have so much shame built in. It's really important to have a scientific understanding of it because you can look at and talk about sex from non-biased perspectives. So for instance, you know, if you think that it's totally obscure to have the kink that you're into and it gives you all of this trauma built up by the fact you think that you should have shame associated with that, but then you find out that it's normal, that's a much more comfortable plane of existence.
Yeah, it gives you comfort in it. Doesn't make you feel weird at all. I think a lot of things in sex are normal and people just feel so guilty about it to the point that like they don't want to tell anybody.
Yeah, and if you're able to kind of classify it from an unbiased perspective, then you're able to understand it in a realistic way. And so that's what this article endeavors to do. He basically is defining what is normal. He gives the word normal four different types of definitions. So the first one is statistically normal. So this is, you know, we have interviewed a random sample of this many people, and we have found that within greater than 50% of the population, if something's happening, that makes the something normal. So the first statistic that they have, again, being greater than 50% statistically significant, one third of men engage in homosexual acts and one sixth of women engage in sexual acts. So again, like the sample that they're using here is a little bit biased because they did interview so many male prostitutes who were having sex with men. But what he is saying is
homosexuality is not normal at all.
Stop. I think it's amazing that he talks about homosexuality here as like normalized, because again, it's 1965. Like, homosexuality was still a crime in a lot of places. Like, people would get arrested for being in love. But I think it's interesting that he says, you know, 1/3 of men, but 1/6 of women, because like, in my experience, I feel like when you're looking at like the Kinsey scale and, you know, maybe you're not exactly totally straight, I feel like a lot more women would cop to that than men. So I guess this is talking more specifically about like acts of homosexuality. Another thing that he's talking about statistically is masturbation, which again, I think these numbers are maybe not 100% accurate, but he says 95% of men, 65% of women, and then less than 50% of married women masturbate. So 95% of men consistently, and then women, it depends on whether or not they're married, which there is a reporting bias in this, again, because there is shame associated with masturbation in women, but also because that less than 50% of married women, they're being interviewed at the same time that their husband's in the room. So of course they're not going to want to cop to masturbating.
Yeah, they're going to be like, this guy over here has whack dick. I got to flick my own bean, otherwise I'm not going to be satisfied. Yeah, they're not going to say that. The numbers should be like equally, like a good 95% of women masturbate. There's nothing wrong with that. Guys do it too.
I think even if you are in a healthy relationship, a healthy sex relationship, there's still room for masturbation built.
Yeah, 100%. Your partner can help you out. You help out your partner at the same time. It's a win-win scenario. There's nothing wrong with, you know, masturbating when you're in a relationship. It's a very normal thing to do.
It would be statistically significant, statistically considered normal in all men and in unmarried women, or, you know, as we're saying, probably all women. And then homosexuality, again, considered more normal in men, less normal in women at the time. He's saying if you're more educated, you're statistically more likely to engage in oral sex. 85% of people have non-marital intercourse. So this kind of harkens back to the point of like, it's important to have these numbers to look at, because I think at the time, non-marital sex, much less common, much more judged. But when you look at this number, 85% of people having non-marital sex, whether that is like premarital or extramarital, that is a statistically significant number. And maybe those people wouldn't cop to it in real life. And you think that that's something that's shameful, but
I think, well, so far from what I've heard, I think these numbers are great, even if a lot of them are like watered down, because I'm sure there's a lot more women masturbating. But even then, I feel like they're really helpful for people. Just about everybody else has sex before they're married, so I'm good. You know, I don't gotta. I've been feeling guilty about this. Yeah, I don't gotta feel guilty about it anymore. And maybe some women could be like, oh wow. Some married women could be like, oh, wow. There's 1 out of 2 other women, married women, are also masturbating. So I'm not alone. I shouldn't feel guilty about this. I'm just doing what makes me feel good.
Yeah, so they're talking about everything, like considering statistics, so greater than 50%. Everything here is pretty normal. Like, normal sex in terms of statistics is anything but pedophilia and rape. And again, revolutionary for them to say that homosexuality is normal, because again, it's illegal under sodomy laws and still a mental disorder in the DSM at the time. But they're claiming that oral sex, extramarital sex, homosexual sex, and masturbation are all statistically normal. So then that takes us to our second category, which is phylogenetics. So this is comparing human sexuality to sexuality of other mammals in order to determine whether or not it's normal. So the interesting thing here is first that the fact that we are monogamous as mammals, like we're not actually monogamous, but that our society values monogamy, is abnormal, because if you look at other mammals, monogamy is not a priority. You know, we know that there's only a few that are.
Do you think the reason why a lot of these animals are just having sex with multiple partners, even if like they have a kid with, you know, their own, whatever, right? It's like maybe they just forget what their partner looks like because they all look the same.
We all look the same.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. But like every beaver looks the same. I've never seen a different beaver. If a beaver looks a little bit different.
Dogs look different because you value looking at them. Well, part of that monogamy, like, again, we are not built to be monogamous. We have become monogamous because of religion and morality and whatever. But like, you know, you're reading Playboy in 1975. Monogamy is not a topic of conversation. It's all about swinging and nudist parties and all of that. But monogamy for us, yeah, it's not, we weren't built to be monogamous. We're not like those penguins that like only settle down with one penguin for the rest of their lives.
Well, hold on. Whoa. Speaking of penguins, have you seen that video of that penguin coming and finding his girl cheating on him? That is the saddest thing in the world. That makes me cry. That makes me so sad, and I think that's why we should just continue being monogamous so that that doesn't happen ever again.
What about that picture of like that one penguin who is like widowed? I think they're both widows and they like hang out together. They're like old penguins, so they're not in love with each other because they already had their mates, but their mates have passed and they spend time together looking at the sunset.
That is pretty sad, but that's their fault for having their partner die. So do better next time.
But yeah, monogamy in humans is abnormal. We are not penguins. Masturbation, oral sex, and homosexuality, those are all normal phylogenetically. So other mammals, other monkeys, and dogs, and other animals that are mammals, they all masturbate. They have oral sex. They have sex with other female and male animals kind of non-discriminately, and especially in some animals' cases it fluctuates, but just in terms of the general phylogenetic understanding of normality, masturbation, oral sex, homosexuality, those are all cool. The other thing that is different for humans than other animals, except for maybe primates, is that sex for us is face to face. You have eye contact and whatever is resulting from that emotionality with your partner. Whereas, you know, if you're a dog or if you're doing it doggy style, you don't have that same intimacy. So that's something that it does set us apart from other
mammals. I'm trying to imagine dogs having sex missionary.
Our poor listeners. The other ways that they define normality and like the other criteria that they define it under is moral, legal, and social. So basically moral being like what we consider morally acceptable. This is really highly based on religion. And one thing that's super interesting about that is they're talking about a lot of the religious codes that have to do with sex. Those were created in times of like early Judaism. When these parts of the Bible were written, Jews were in exile and needed to reproduce. So they had outlawed things that weren't reproduction. So things such as like foreplay or just sex for pleasure is a lot less important than sex for procreation. Another reason why like you might outlaw homosexuality is because that's again sex for pleasure, but not for procreation. So a lot of those early moral understandings, especially within Christianity, come from that Old Testament version of no, you're just having sex to have more children.
I feel bad for these like super religious people, man. They're not having no good sex at all.
Exactly. And so within this moral understanding that, again, so many people still have today, we would consider masturbation, again, just sex for pleasure and not for the purpose of reproducing. We'd consider that abnormal. We would consider homosexuality abnormal. Non-marital sex, so sex without your partner, abnormal. Mouth to genital sex, only normal as foreplay for actual reproduction. Pedophilia, abnormal. Rape, abnormal. So the only kind of normal sex there is just very much like partner, let's have a baby. Legally, this is interesting. A lot of this has changed. Masturbation, that's normal. It's considered normal. You can't get arrested for masturbating unless you're doing it publicly.
I was about to say, I've been arrested for masturbating before.
At this time, legally, homosexuality is considered abnormal. Again, like you could go to prison because somebody suspects that you're a homosexual, which is, I don't even need to justify that with an adjective, like how wrong that is. But they would consider that like legally abnormal. Non-marital sex, we've got a question mark in that column, basically because some types of non-marital sex are considered legal, but you know, cheating on your wife, that in a lot of places is considered illegal at the time. Mouth genital sex, illegal. This is super interesting. At the time of this writing, oral sex was a felony in every single state but Illinois.
Shout out Illinois. I'm trying to get that sucky suck.
I don't know why. I couldn't figure out exactly why Illinois was so sexually progressive, but they were the first ones to repeal sodomy laws. They were, of course, the first ones that had oral sex as technically legal. And then also the interesting consideration there is, like, how the heck are you going to enforce that? Like, you're going to go into somebody's marital bedroom and see that they're going down on someone else and arrest them? Like, so legally, pedophilia is bad. Legally, rape is bad. Although how they're defining rape legally is maybe not as all-encompassing as it needs to be. But that's legally. The last one is socially. So what they mean for socially here, whether it's socially normal, that's to say whether or not sexual behavior does no harm to society or its members and is normal. So this is the definition that I personally like the best. We'd say masturbation's normal, homosexuality, normal, non-marital sex, normal, oral sex, normal, pedophilia, abnormal, rape, abnormal. So that's the one I can get the most behind. Basically, like, as long as whatever you're doing in your sex life is not causing harm to other people, that's what we would consider normal. So the consensus overall is that most of this is normal. And our definitions of it, that's where we get the difference in whether or not we're deciding that something is normal or not. And really not that much has changed. I mean, the fact that homosexuality and oral sex is legal, that has changed since then. But otherwise, I mean, our understanding of all of this, it should all just be normal, except for pedophilia and rape.
Except for pedophilia, right? I think it's really nice that that he has, like, different definitions almost of, like, normal. Like, what are these old white people who make the laws think is normal? As opposed to what everybody else thinks is normal. A lot of this guilt could also come from, like, laws, you know, like the church, and the law says that me loving another man is not normal. But, you know, and then you look at the stats, 1 out of 3 guys being homosexual, and that's a pretty good number. So I should feel less guilty about this because I'm just loving who I want to love.
In some ways, we've progressed. In some ways, we've stayed depressingly the same. But in general, I think this kind of covers qualities and understanding of sexuality that still do matter today. You know, every conversation about guilt, every conversation about whether or not something's normal, these are still things that people think about and people concern themselves with. And for this publication, again, in 1965, to take the chance to shed light on all of this, that's pretty revolutionary when sex isn't even something that you can talk about, like, outside of your marital bed. Playboy does a lot for us in terms of sexuality. And when we dive into the issues that, like, are more later in the 70s and stuff, you'll see a lot bigger conversation about hot topics in terms of sexuality that still carry over to today. So if you think that we're missing anything here, that there are any topics of conversation in terms of sexuality within the pages of this issue that we haven't covered, or if there's anything that you want to comment on, email playboyrevisited@gmail.com. If you want to listen to the playlist from this issue, you can find it. It's called Playboy Revisited 0365. So that's, like, the month and the year, just all one string of numbers. Playboy Revisited 0365. Super jazzy, super fun. It's all the music that they talk about here. And Google pictures of the centerfold, because that's the sexiest thing here, and we can't show that to you on air.
I don't know. I feel like there's sexier things there. What's that one guy that does the races comics?
Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, he's pretty sexy.
I'm Sarah at Playboy Revisited on social media.
I'm Aries at Aries in the Hosa.
See you next time on Playboy Revisited.